What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. I'm very glad that you have tuned in today. As some of you know, but the new people do not know, all of my episodes are shaped by a tool called the prayer wheel. It originated from Catherine Ponder's book called The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity. You see, life is divided into six areas: the spiritual, the mental, emotional, physical, social, and financial. And if one of these categories is out of whack, it can affect all the rest. So I want you to go to my website, if you haven't already, and download the prayer wheel handout. You go to my website, www.thedrmelanieshow.com. Go under the resources heading and print out the prayer wheel, the one that's on the white background. Then follow the instructions. There's a handout for that too. And this will help you to move and remove the roadblocks in your life to accomplish your dreams, your goals, and your mission. Now, as you know, some of you, I've used this tool for 37 years, and it works quite well. So I want you to email me after 30 days of using it to let me know how it helped you. But if you have questions before then, you can email me at drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Well, today's episode is covering a whole bunch of these areas: the mental, emotional, physical, social, and financial areas as it relates to children. Children can pull at our heartstrings, especially if they aren't getting their needs met, whether it's a physical need, a mental need, an emotional need, or if they just lack the essentials for learning. According to the website help.firstbook.org, in the United States, there's 27 million children living in low-income families. And as many as 60% of these families do not have any, zero, books in their homes. 80% of children that are preschool and school age that serves this population have no books in their facilities at all. The reading comprehension scores of these children is 40 points below the average of those that come from high-income families. And those that come from these families, on an average, only have 25 hours of one-to-one reading to them, as compared to the middle-class families who have 1,000 to 1,700 hours. But this problem doesn't exist just in our country. It's in other places as well. If you are able to read, I ask you to read to somebody today, no matter what their age, no matter where they are, but take the opportunity to help someone to listen to what is being written in the Word. It's never too late and it's never too early. Every night, my daughter and I read to her 5-month-old son. Believe it or not, he actually listens and follows me with his eyes, and I point to the pictures as I read the pages. And we also sing to him. I can't carry a tune, but he doesn't care. But I sing anyway, And what happens is it calms him down. And we also play the music to the songs, and I point to the words in a book so that he can see them and hear them. Well, today we're going to hear a story of a woman named Carol Kresge. She found that there was a place she visited that there were no libraries and very few books, and she did something about it. Well, in the United States, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, in a typical week in the year 2005, there were 12.7 million of the 20 million children under age 5 that were in some sort of a child care arrangement. Almost two-thirds of preschoolers are in some kind of regular child care arrangement. Almost one-quarter are in organized facilities or daycare centers being the most popular. Relatives provide half of the care to preschoolers. And in today's world, it's almost imperative for both parents to have to work to meet just the essential needs of a child. And the cost of daycare, in 2005, it averaged $6,000 per child per year. Now, the average is about $7,200. But if you break it down into the number of hours, that isn't even minimum wage. And after all, can you put a price tag on what it's worth for somebody to take care of your child? How do you know if your child's in the right place? How do you survive the guilt of leaving your child when you really want to be with them, but you have to provide food and shelter for them? These are the questions we're going to answer today. Roman Fontenot is the owner of the Child Growth and Development Center, and he's been in business over 25 years. He was going to go to law school, but his family asked him to help out with their family daycare center. And he did. And he fell in love with the children and he stayed. And now almost 26 years later, he has 6 kids of his own that he homeschools there at the facility. And he gets to nurture many other children. This is a man you can feel easily comfortable with, even only spending 5 minutes with him. And you know that he's going to take good care of your child as if it were his own. The third interview that we have today is my daughter, Val Barton. She's a first-time mom at the age of 38. How do you leave your children with a stranger when you have to go back to work? How do you know how to pick the right place? The place that will get the joy of seeing all your child's first while you have to be at work. She'll tell you how she coped with that and how to make the right choices for your child. We're going to listen to each of these taped interviews, but before we do that, let's go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you ready to go green?
You've asked, and we've heard you. Voice America presents the Green Talk Network. Environmental topics are at the forefront of our society, and the Green Talk Network is here to keep you up to date on the latest trends and new innovations for the eco-conscious lifestyle. We'll help promote a variety of ideas on the environment, from global warming issues to how you can become more eco-friendly in your daily activities. Be a part of the solution, not the problem. Visit the Green Talk Network page on voiceamerica.com and tune in to help spread the green.
Join Patricia Raskin, the host of Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com, Monday at 11 Pacific. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call to Positive Living, Mondays at 11 Pacific Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today we're talking about children and their needs. We're covering the different areas of our life related to the mental, emotional, social, and financial aspects. Now let's listen to the interview with Carol Kresge and what she did to help children who had no libraries or books.
Hello, this is Dr. Melanie, and I am interviewing Carol Kresge today, and she's going to tell us about a special project that she's been involved in that I think is fascinating, and I believe that it's going to encourage others to step out and do some things that they've wanted to do but been afraid to. So welcome, Carol.
Thank you very much.
So you had a life before this project, and I'm going to keep them in suspense about what the project is, but tell us about your life before this project.
I was in the healing arts. I was originally a massage therapist and then studied acupuncture and cranial sacral. I live in a land cooperative.
Oh.
In Florida.
Tell people about that, because I'm here with you, and it's a wonderful healing, energetic place. So tell them about it.
It's a beautiful community. It has, each person buys their own land, but within the cost of that is a lot of common land. And so it's very heavily wooded. It has swamps. We have boardwalks that go through the swamps. There's a lot of nature, owls and hawks and foxes and deer. There are covenants that limit the cutting of trees and limit outdoor lighting.
Okay.
So that it's very much like being immersed in nature.
Very nourishing. Very
nourishing,
very calming, and very hard to find unless you know how to get here.
Yes.
So when you were the acupuncturist, did you go different places to get the training for that?
I got my training here in Florida through an apprenticeship.
Okay.
My original massage training was in New Mexico.
Oh.
At the New Mexico School of Natural Therapeutics.
Okay.
And actually, my original healing arts training was I was traveling in Guatemala and I came upon this natural healing clinic. I got two massages over time and saw the same two women in the sauna both times.
Oh.
Who had debilitating arthritis and had progressed tremendously in the time in between. And so this was a Seventh-day Adventist medical missionary training facility. And I'm not a Seventh-day Adventist, but I spent 9 months there studying massage and herbs and diet because I was so impressed at the change in these women. So that was the beginning of the healing path.
And was there healing for you? Was there any physical things going on with you when you were there that got better?
Not that I remember.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Sometimes the healing is...
Right.
spiritual.
Right. Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was an evolutionary process.
Right.
Uh-huh.
It was the beginning of a long journey.
Okay. So how many years were you the massage therapist and acupuncturist?
Oh... Let's see. Probably I became a massage therapist in 78, 79.
Okay.
And I took my sabbatical here in 99.
All right.
So that's 20 years.
That's a long time to
do
something.
That's a long time.
So now we're going to talk about this special project. Tell our listening audience what it is and how it came about.
Well, I went on what I thought was a sabbatical. I thought I was taking a year off of my practice and fully intending to come back.
Okay.
And then, in the process, changed my life. So I went to Bangkok because I had been in and out of Thailand for years studying massage and studying Thai massage and studying Buddhist meditation and was teaching English as a way of supporting myself. And at Christmas vacation, I went over into Laos to a town called Luang Prabang, and it was miserable.
Oh.
It was the coldest winter. I had all my clothes on.
Oh.
Everybody usually goes to Luang Prabang, falls in love with it, and wants to stay. And I went, and it was just cold.
Okay.
But while I was there, I went to English classes. I was teaching English in Bangkok.
Yes.
And so I went to English classes, and I saw so many kids really, really, really pushing for education without access to to anything. I saw no books.
Oh.
And so over my time there, which was a week, I decided that I, when I left Bangkok, I would bring all my teaching materials into Luang Prabang and leave them as a little library, and then I would go home and continue my life. And the next last day I was in Luang Prabang, I reached the point where I had seen enough. I was at a temple and I was talking to a young Buddhist novice monk, and they're on an education path.
Okay.
And he had excellent English. And at that time, taking an English class was $2 a month for an hour a day, 5 days a week.
Reasonable.
And so,
if you have the money, yeah.
Right, right. And so he asked me a question, and I said, well, what did the teacher say? And he said, oh, I don't go to English class. I can't afford to go to English class.
Oh.
I copy my friend's notebook.
Oh.
And that was just the moment when I had seen enough. And my thought was, what could these people do if they had access to the tools they need to develop their skills?
And you had never thought about this before.
I had never thought about this before.
You didn't have this in your plan of what you're going to do for your second career.
I was going home, you know, when my contract in Bangkok was finished.
Okay.
And much to my surprise, I just totally changed directions. And I came home and did a lot of research and started a nonprofit organization and went back and started libraries.
And what's the nonprofit called? What's the name of it?
It's called the Language Project.
Okay.
And it was called the Language Project because at the time my emphasis was libraries to support English language study. English is the ticket to a job, to education. And in Luang Prabang, Luang Prabang is a UNESCO World Heritage town.
Okay. What does that mean?
That means it's a cultural gem of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Places like Angkor Wat are World Heritage Centers. Usually it is a monument, a temple. It's not usually a whole town. And Luang Prabang was designated as the best preserved town in Southeast Asia.
I see.
And so it received that designation in 1995.
Oh.
And I was there Christmas 99, and so there was the beginnings of tourism. And of course then there would be the beginnings of a lot of job possibilities if you had English language skills.
And that's where you came in.
And that's where I came in. And Laos is an underdeveloped country. About 70% of the population lives on less than $2 a day.
Wow. That's a very small amount.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you came home, you researched.
I went back to start libraries. And the best thing that happened was I immediately figured out that I didn't know what I was doing. I had an idea about what a library needed. It needed opening hours, it needed tables and chairs, it needed library cards.
Yes.
And books. And my first library had none of the first ones. It only had books. And so that was a fabulous thing to have happen to me because I instantly understood that no matter what I did for research, I couldn't know what I was doing, that I needed to make my best guess based on what I saw and stay open and continually change. And so I look at my project as an ongoing experiment. And how do you provide people with access to the tools they need to study and help themselves?
And how do you do this financially? I mean, you're one person.
I started this out of my bank account.
Oh.
Which was a surprise to me also.
Yes, I can imagine.
And started an American 501c3 charity, a nonprofit, and looked for donations.
Okay.
And over time, the donations have come in.
What kind of sources? Is it private individuals or companies?
It's mostly private individuals. From private individuals, I've started to get a little bit of company matching.
All right.
There has been a company recently who, through an individual, has given us for our biggest library, given us wireless internet access. Mm. And I have a little bit of grant money.
Okay.
I'm not as interested in grant money. I see a lot of problems with development projects. And a lot of it has to do with how the development world works. And someone comes in with a plan.
Mm-hmm. Not your plan, their plan.
Oh, yes. Or someone like me comes in with a plan for something new.
Yes.
And you can't know everything.
Correct.
And so in an underdeveloped country, you'll get in the very beginning or the middle of this, and you'll say, oh, there's a gap.
Mm.
I really need to adjust. This needs to be addressed first. Or, oh, we really need to turn right here.
Yes.
And go down this other path. And most grants don't allow the freedom to do that kind of adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a consequence, a lot of development money gets misspent.
Mm.
And I see it all the time. Or development projects take the safe path.
Yes.
They do what's already been done.
Mm-hmm.
They go to villages that are successful and have already been worked with, and that way you can be successful. Whereas what really needs to happen is some risk-taking, some new ideas, some different locations.
Mm-hmm.
So I immensely appreciate my individual donors because they have faith in the project and support us finding our way.
So,
and we're very successful.
Good. So if people wanted to see, because a lot of people are visual, they wanted to see your website, what do they go to?
They go to www.thelanguageproject.org. Sometimes people make a mistake because they're very used to putting in .com.
Correct.
But this is a
.org. Okay. And when they go to that website, because I went there yesterday to look up things about it, there's videos there they can watch. So they actually get to see what happens there.
Right. Yes.
And how much of a need that there is. So do you do this all by yourself over there?
I'm the only foreigner with the project.
All right.
I have Lao staff. I also have some foreign volunteers who usually are coming through town or just show up in town and find us.
I see.
And offer to volunteer.
All right. So what's the other language besides the secondary language being English? What is the common language there?
The language of the country is Lao.
Okay.
The Lao has many ethnic groups.
Uh-huh.
And our biggest library in Luang Prabang has a lot of Hmong, H-M-O-N-G. And so Hmong is their native language.
And do you speak these
I don't
dialect?
Speak Hmong. I can say hello and see you later. In Hmong. I do speak Lao.
All right. How long did that take to learn?
That took a little while. I can only read and write at a first, second grade level.
Okay.
It's an interesting language. It's tonal,
mm-hmm.
and I can't carry a tune, so
okay.
I have a little trouble there. There's no spaces between words.
Oh.
Vowels come before, after, on top of, below, or all around the consonant.
Hmm.
And so it's not a straightforward process learning to read.
So it's a lifetime process to be able to do this.
Okay.
Wow. That's very interesting and sounds very confusing to do all that. So when you went there, because you've been going to Thailand for years,
right.
What adjustment was it for you to actually live there?
Laos is not difficult to live in. You know, it's a Asian country. It's a rice-eating country. And especially if you're out in the countryside, it's rice three times a day, which I can get very tired of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in the countryside. I'm in a large town in the north. And because it's a tourist town, I have other food options.
Good.
But being immersed out in the countryside can have its challenges in terms of food. The culture, they have a very different way of thinking and acting. Saving face, like in all Asian countries, is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that, as an American, I'm pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I tend to call a spade a spade.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a challenge on both sides.
I bet it is.
They have a system, the government system is still a communist state.
Oh.
And education.
You're accepted and allowed to be there to do what you're doing.
Yes.
Okay.
The education system is a rote education system. So you put those two together and you get not a lot of ability to think outside the box, to problem solve, to reason, to have ideas, do new things.
So you have to work within their system.
I work within their system, but if I have an independent library, and
okay.
the biggest one in the Long Prabang is independent, it's not in a school, it's not in an orphanage, I can pretty much run it the way I want. And so some of what I do there is give them experiences of a different system.
All right.
A system that functions in a very Western way. It has opening and closing hours, and it opens and closes
mm-hmm.
when it says or announces when it's going to be closed. For instance, computer sign-up is fair.
Okay.
You can't jump the queue. You
mm-hmm.
can't be somebody's friend or somebody important and get priorities. And so I do a lot of modeling a different system.
Mm-hmm. And they honor that.
They honor that,
okay.
yeah.
And do you oversee all of these libraries?
I do. Some are within schools,
mm-hmm.
and so it's kind of joint.
Okay.
And how much power the school has and how much power I have
mm.
varies.
Yes.
With the vision of the schoolmaster, basically.
Mm-hmm. But it's good that they're open to what you're doing.
It yes.
sounds like they're very appreciative of it.
Well, that's very interesting to me.
Okay.
I'm not sure that a lot of people within the system really understand.
Mm.
You know, in setting up, I'm doing something different this year, which is I'm doing teacher libraries,
mm-hmm.
and we're targeting exceptional teachers. Teachers who not only teach well, but go the extra mile for their students.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're finding these teachers in the north, and we're giving them what we call a suitcase library. It's in a small carry-on suitcase.
Oh.
And the library is in their subject,
mm-hmm.
math, physics, chemistry, and it's theirs.
Mm.
They can take it to the school, they can keep it at home. If they move villages, it goes with them.
A wonderful concept.
Because yeah. what I found is that the librarian is key.
Uh-huh.
Every school wants a library.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it would function. And even if you find a school and the right person in that school, your whole library can collapse
mm-hmm.
if that person leaves. People who love reading, who understand what a library is, and understand how to use it to engage
mm-hmm.
users and encourage learning are rare.
I see. Okay. Well, we're running out of time, but what I would like to have you tell our listeners is if somebody else gets an idea of something like this or something totally different, but they get an idea that they want to do this, would you encourage them to step out and to try it?
I would say absolutely go for it.
Okay.
Don't look back. For me, it's been an extraordinary experience. I have no regrets.
Good.
About changing my life. It's interesting because we're talking now in Tallahassee where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been back seeing my old home, seeing my old friends, and I was curious about how it would feel this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a wonderful time, but I have no regrets.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, if people wanted to contribute or to help you out, do they go to your website?
The website is the best place. It has contact information. It has how you can donate. It has some great photographs some interesting information about Laos.
So that's www.thelanguageproject.org.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being my guest host today, Carol, and I wish you well on your journey, and I will direct comments to you if listeners send them to me.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay. It's now time for us to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Roman Fontenot about his daycare center.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa provides homeowners and investors eager to invest well in real estate the knowledge, resources, and tools necessary to generate significant wealth. Our focus will be the paradigm. Live where you want. Invest where it makes the most sense. Listen live to the brightest minds in real estate investment every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. That's Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa, where America learns to invest. Best.
Our lives are shaped with stories that begin the very day we are born. Every individual has their story, and whether it involves family, friends, society, culture, science, art, or love, our stories help define who we are. Tune in for Tuesdays with Maureen, Tales from the Search for True Self, as she helps you to not only understand these stories to improve our health and well-being, but to understand how our minds and bodies work together to adapt. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
If you are looking for a real political discussion from more than one viewpoint, make sure you tune in to No Labels Radio with Nancy Jacobson and Mark McKinnon. It's not left, not right, but forward. As part of the No Labels movement, which promotes common sense solutions to our country's most pressing problems, our program will feature hot political topics with serious players driving a national conversation. Listen for No Labels Radio every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let's think forward.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show. Do you have your child in daycare? Do you know your child's in the right one? What if you're about to take your child to a new one? How do you get the child adjusted? How do you know if the owners or the workers of the daycare are the right people for you? Well, we're going to listen to an interview with Roman Fontenot, who owns the Child Development and Daycare Center in Tallahassee, Florida. So let's listen to the interview and hear what he has to tell us.
I'm interviewing Roman Fontenot, who is the owner of the child growth and development business. So, Roman, can you tell us, the listening audience, how you came to get started in this business?
Well, after college, I came out of school in 86, 87. My parents had decided they wanted to open a preschool. My father was a professor at Florida State, and my mother taught kindergarten and preschool for 20 years, and after retiring from that, she didn't like sitting at home. So she and my father asked, would the children be interested in starting a family business, and we all said yes. So she, my brother and father and sister and I all got together and began a child growth and development. After, I guess, a year or so, I had plans on going to law school and put that on hold and enjoyed running the business with a family. My father got ill and I got part ownership and been hooked ever since.
Oh, sounds like it was meant to be.
It was.
Okay. So it's been around for 25 years.
25 years. Oh, well, matter of fact, let's see, we started in 86, so we're in our 26th year.
Very good. So you must be doing it right, because a lot of places don't last that long.
You're right about that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you help children get adjusted when they first come here to the new environment?
It, depending on the age, infants are the easiest, of course, because at that age, they know, you know, mom and daddy, but the earlier they are, the easier it is for them to adjust. All they need is to be held, to be loved, to be fed.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that they feel secure when they get those things, so they're the easiest. The two-year-old age, once they're toddler age, those are probably the most difficult because usually they're coming from either in-home with their parents or a relative or from an in-home childcare setting, which would mean they're around 1 to 4 kids. So when they come into our setting and they have, you know, 8 or 10 children they're rubbing elbows with, sometimes that's a bit overwhelming for them. In those cases, those are the times where the teacher has to do a lot of lap time. Most of the toddlers are so well adjusted, and they don't want to sit in a lap and be held all day. They're ready to play. The new children coming in will have a little bit of that to get acclimated to the area and sit and watch. And then you see them kind of slowly progressing to get out and start mixing it up with the whole group. The older children, the 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, those are back easy again because those kids have been acclimated to other children in some sort of setting, whether it be a church setting, a playground, playgroup setting, or another school. So those are the ones that are easy. So it's the toughest ones are that 1.5, 2.5-year-old age, and those are the kids that the teachers just have to do a little bit more TLC.
Okay. So what should a parent look for when they're trying to decide whatever is the right daycare?
Well, you know, a center being clean would be, you know, most parents think that that's probably a big step. That could change. You know, you could look at a center for 5 minutes and deem it unclean, but, you know, it could be just in the middle of a messy time. What most parents really get a feel for, and I try and make sure that my parents visit me during those times, are when there's a hectic moment or like pickup or drop off, and they can see the children in action. They see how happy the kids are. They see the parents. They see her interaction with the parents and the teachers. Those are the things that are, you know, will tell the truth and show you. If you have parents that are happy coming to pick their children up, the kids are happy, you can see those things. That gives the parent a lot of ease. Most of my parents see that, and they see the interaction with myself being the director, with the parents or grandparents, as well as with the teachers, and they get a feel for that. I guess the next thing would be in the classroom if you're coming during the day to see how the children are interacting. Even if your child may be shy and scared or crying, if the other children have acclimated well, you can look at it and see you figure your child's going to be there soon, whether it be 2 days, a week, or a month. Sooner or later, your child will adjust to that. Most times, the parents are the ones that have the most difficult adjustments.
Yes.
Those are the ones that, and as a director, I won't even wait for a parent to call me. Usually I'll call them, and sometimes parents feel like they're bothering you by calling and checking.
Yes.
They feel guilty by doing that, but that's not the case. Usually I will try and call the parent if I haven't heard from them in a couple hours just to say, hey, you know, he or she is doing really, really good, or, you know, and let them know how that drop off is. And those are the types of things that make parents feel much better.
Yes, I agree very much so. So how does a parent know if the daycare their child is in is the right one for that child?
Again, by seeing things before their child has enrolled, by seeing how the center runs. I always encourage my parents to, after they finish visiting my center, to make sure they visit 3 or 4 others to make a comparison. Because size of a center is a big deal. I mean, I have in my infant room and toddler's rooms, I have 12 infants, 12 toddlers. That room size may be too big for your child. If your child is used to being around 2 or 3 or 4 children, then you need to find a setting like that.
Okay.
So those are usually the things that you look at, you know, what type of child you have, what type of, how much confidence your child has. Not that a child who only wants to be around 2 or 3 has no confidence, but sometimes that gives a child a little bit more, self-confidence only being around, you know, a handful of children. And those children will grow, and ultimately, if they're in public school system, will be grouped around 20 to 25 kids. It's just kind of a beginning step for that. You just look at whatever center offers, and you look at the setting and see. Some centers are a little bit more busy than mm-hmm. others, or some settings are more busy, and you know your child. If your child is one of those that likes to be off on his own a little bit, then a smaller setting might be better suited for your child.
Okay. So what can the parent do to help the child adjust to the environment?
Talk to the child, and we're talking about a child ages two and up usually. Mm-hmm. You can talk to the child and get them excited about going to school if they haven't been before, or if they're making a change. Sometimes you don't even have to do that, but talking to the child beforehand, letting them know that you know, we're going to a new school or possibly looking at a new school, and making sure that the child understands fully what's going on. A lot of times the parents won't say anything to the child. They make a change and the child is left, you know, not knowing mm-hmm. What's going on. Separation anxiety is kind of strong at that 2 to 3-year-old age. So no matter where you put the child, if they're suffering from a little anxiety from separating, that's going to be an issue no matter where you go.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're 3 years old enough, that's usually not the case. And you know, at that point, are trying to reason with your child and let them know, you know, why the change is happening.
Mm-hmm. What I do when I bring my grandson, who's 5 months old, is we call it school. And we start getting excited about it and saying, we're getting all your things ready to go to school. And we sing in the car on the way to school. And then I'm always excited when I bring him. And I said, here you are with all your friends. Even though he's 5 months, it's setting the stage.
Absolutely. Sets the stage. So you're laying the foundation now for later on. And they mm-hmm. just acclimated to that setting early on. And you've basically, with your voice and your tone, it's soothing.
Yes.
You know, so they never experience any of that animosity or any anxiety mm-hmm. towards school.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Good. So if our listeners want to have more information from you, is there a way they could contact you? Like
absolutely.
Email
my email is childgrowth@comcast.net.
Childgrowth@comcast.net.
Correct.
Okay.
All of my parents have my cell phone number, and that is area code 850-443-0843.
Okay.
And, of course, the office number is 850-385-2258.
Okay. And thank you, Roman, for doing this. And if people contact me, I will get the questions to you or comments.
Thank you
so
much.
And I appreciate very much you doing this interview.
It has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I have enjoyed this interview with Roman Fontenot, and let's go to a break now.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Taking care of yourself should not be complicated. The process of restoring your health can be simple, easy, and enjoyable by making a few small changes one at a time. That's the principle behind From the Inside Out with your host, Dr. Rhonda Nelson. If you're looking for a simple way to improve your health, we'll provide the motivation, encouragement, and information about how to restore optimal health one step at a time and from the inside out. Tune in every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. The third interview in today's program is with my daughter, Val Barton. She's an information technology supervisor. She has her master's in business administration. She was out on 12 weeks leave after having her son, by C-section. She has some complications that she had to deal with, which made it harder to do this recovery. But then she had to go back to work, a heart-wrenching but necessary financial decision. She went through a whole bunch of emotions. So let's hear how she coped with going back to work and choosing a daycare.
Hello, we are here today interviewing my daughter, Val Barton, and she's going to talk to us about her experience of taking her son to daycare. So, how did you know which daycare to choose?
I asked a bunch of people at work who they recommended, and I knew which people were parents, and so I asked them where they took their children. And it was people that I knew I respected and would value their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I decided.
Okay. So what would you recommend that parents look for when they're choosing a daycare?
Well, there's a bunch of different websites you can go out to, and there's, you know, what to expect when you're expecting, and those books that give you questions to ask daycares when you go to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the best idea is to go by your gut feeling when you go in. Of course, you have to go in and check it out on your own and see what you think of the place, but you should check and see how many workers they have per child, how many children
mm-hmm.
per worker, what kind of activities they do with the kids, just the general feeling you get when you walk in the place, how does it smell,
yes.
How do the other kids there seem happy and healthy and thriving,
mm-hmm.
those kinds of things.
And I would suggest going during a time that is very busy to see how they handle that, maybe pick up time or drop-off time, maybe not go in, but just see how they handle that.
Yeah, I wish I'd asked the question when we went and visited, because I went and visited when I was pregnant, and then I went and visited again before we took him for the first time. And I wish I'd asked how they handle drop-off and pick-up,
mm-hmm.
so I would have been more familiar when I got there. I didn't realize that they'll come out and get him from the car in the morning, which is really nice. Or, you know, when it's raining, they'll bring him out in the afternoon. Those were things that I just wish I'd known ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. That would be good to know. And good things for other parents to ask about. So you were out for 12 weeks after you had your C-section.
Yes.
How did you adjust to no sleep, an infant needing constant care, and then to get ready emotionally to go back to work?
I don't think it's something you just plan for. I think it's something you just deal with as the time comes. You know what you have to get done at that moment, and that's what you do.
Mm-hmm. And you see if you can get help from grandparents or relatives or significant others.
Yes, Mom, you better be helped.
Thank you. Could you please describe for our listeners what it was like leaving him for the first time at daycare?
Well, for me, I'm really good at compartmentalizing pieces of my life. So I put him in daycare and I left. And knew that he was in good hands and tried to focus on work and getting back into work. So it wasn't too terrible for me. People
mm-hmm.
would ask about him, and I'd think about him, and it'd make me sad a little. But for the most part, I was able to stay focused on work because I knew as soon as I get home from work, I'm totally about him.
Okay. That's a good way to deal with it. So what advice would you give mothers for the first day when they have to leave their child to daycare? What would you recommend they do that maybe you did or would wish you had done?
It's good to beforehand, you know, leave your child with a trusted caregiver for a few hours here and there so you can just get used to them not being with you all of the time. And then you just have to be really comfortable with where you choose to send them so that you know that they're in good hands so you worry less. But I think for each person it's just an individual experience, so you have to decide what you think will work best for you. For me, it's, you know, putting that piece away for the 8 hours I need to be at work and focus on work.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm finished with work, I put that away, and then I'm all about my family.
Okay. So, like you said, you compartmentalize what you have to do, where you are, when you do it. And when you're with him, you're with him. When you're at work, you're at work.
Right.
Well, emotionally and hormonally, there's so many changes in your body during and after pregnancy. How has that affected you?
Well, you could probably answer that better than I could.
You change.
Yes.
from not being a mom.
I mean, your body's not the same as it was, and it's never really going to be exactly the same as it was before. I'm 5 months now, almost, since I've had him, and I'm still not back to where I was before. Not even as far as my weight goes, but with balance and coordination and just general movement and feeling comfortable in my own skin.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while to get used to, you know, this new body that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't, I mean, stretch marks, and oh, forget about that. So it just, it takes some getting used to and accepting that this is who you are now.
Mm-hmm.
And that now you're a mom.
Right. And things are going to be different forever. You can't go back to being a not a mom.
No, I read somewhere, that someone said that they looked at their stretch marks as more like something that they earned by becoming a mother, and so they weren't ashamed of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that thinking, that you've earned it through all the things that your body has gone through to bring this person into the world. This is the marks to show that you did that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of looking at it. Was there, or is there anything that you've read or a book or a magazine that's really been valuable to you that you'd recommend for other people to read for helpful information?
Well, I read the What to Expect When You're Expecting, and that was really helpful. I like, there's a bunch of different websites that you can go to that tell you, the ones I enjoyed were the ones that tell you each week while you're pregnant what to expect,
mm-hmm.
and what the baby was doing and what your body was doing, and, you know, how to plan for certain things. It gave you tips on things and told you when to start looking for the daycare, when to start thinking about buying cribs and car seats and all that sort of thing. I can't remember off the top of my head what the name of it was, but there's plenty of them out there to check on.
Okay.
There's always good information online, but just remember when you read stuff online that those are people's opinions, and that's what generally happens, but each person is different and each baby is different. Each pregnancy is different, so you can't take it for the gospel for yourself and for your child.
Okay. And if they have somebody they trust, they could ask what they did, what was helpful to them.
Well, yeah, and of course you can always ask your practitioner, your OB,
mm-hmm.
what he or she thinks about things. They're just always so busy when you get in there, and you forget your questions, of course. Of course, write them down because you'll have pregnancy brain and
yes.
forget what you're doing. So it's always good to keep a little notepad to write things down.
Brain fog, yes.
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 Still suffer from that. And the worst part is you lose your vocabulary.
Oh.
You know the words that you want to say, but you just can't think of what they are and get them out of your mouth.
Okay. But they're in there, you just
can't
retrieve them.
You just can't access them.
Okay. Does that eventually come back?
I hope so.
Being a mom for 40 years, I don't remember if it comes back or not. So we'll see over time. One last question I have for you is, all moms have a sense of guilt that they can't be 100% at work, in the relationship with the parent of the child, keeping the house neat, or not keeping your appearance up. How do you deal with that, you know, I can't be superwoman?
Well, I can't say that I've dealt with that successfully yet. I still have lots of guilt, you know, that I'm not spending time with baby's dad, that I'm not keeping the house as clean as I need to, that I haven't lost the weight that I want to lose, that I'm not doing as well at work and focusing on as much work as I could. You have to deal with a lot of guilt just because you're not the same person that you were before. You can't give the same attention to things that you gave previously. So you have to reconcile with yourself. And I think that's a process. And I don't think I'm there yet. I'm getting there. I'm doing better.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn to ask for help. And
huh.
I never was one that wanted to ask for help before.
Okay.
I've learned that I don't have to do it all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I need someone to help me clean the house, then it's okay to ask for help to do that.
Yes, it is. So if our listeners would like to email some questions to you, if they send them to me, would it be okay if I pass them on to you?
Of course.
Okay. Well, we might do an update with you in a few months and see how things have changed, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for letting me interview you today.
You're welcome.
We have heard three interesting interviews today, and I hope you'll re-listen to the broadcast and share it with friends. Next week, we're going to be talking about chronic pain with Dr. Joshi and a compounding pharmacist, Lee Stewart. So email me your questions and comments, and see you next week.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.